Remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS will be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly, baby?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out. And it seems not a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life!
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
I'm Aldi.
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Both eyes are cool.
It's not working.
We're both reversing the polarity.
Yes, I know that.
There's two of us. I'm reversing it, you're reversing it back again. We're confusing the polarity.
Anyone lose a fez?
Despite what they said at the beginning of the episode of Doctor Who, we do want you to listen to this podcast. This is the TARDIS Blend, everyone, here at geeksofdoom.com, where we look at the weekly episodes of Doctor Who during this current season. My name is Greg Davies.
And I'm Tom Cheridar.
And joining us for this week, this week's episode, is our good friend from the Drill Down, also right here at geeksofdoom.com, Dwayne DeFreitas. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Now, look, I'm gonna let you have the floor first, seeing as you're our guest. What is your reaction to Sleep No More, the latest episode of Doctor Who?
I gotta say, I felt like a pang of the waters of Mars, like it was like they really want to bring back that fear, that kind of like, you know, it's okay for like, you know, kids and tweens, but it's still gonna be scary. And I think they almost got there. I think the very end of it was excitingly creepy, but I don't know that they instilled that level of fear. Instead, there was just kind of like a bit of confusion for me.
This has actually been a common remark about this episode that I've been noticing online, that there's a lot of confusion about the conclusion of this episode, and that the execution of the frights, if you will, that they were trying to instill in this episode wasn't as effective as it had been in previous Doctor Who episodes.
Mm.
Tom, what are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I think they cut out the bed right there at the, the end of that. And that's a shame, too, because this episode, honestly, I don't really notice the director type contributions as much as I did this time, because it was so fucking cool. Like, to sit there and see, like, you're using people as cameras. And if you go back and rewatch the episode, and I totally did.
Yeah.
It's like, it's beautifully mastered. And you're like, wow. And for them to kind of just kind of like, okay, well, that's the end. It sucks, because that was really cool all the way up until that last moment where you're like, what happened?
You know, I'm gonna be contrary to you guys. I actually enjoyed the conclusion. I thought it was rapid. It was different. It was disorienting, and it was nice to have an episode for once where the Doctor actually loses. I mean, this was not a win for the Doctor.
This is not a win for the Doctor.
You know, and
I like that too.
And that really stood out to me. I mean, it sets up all kinds of possibilities for future episodes. I don't think we're going to be seeing the Sandman in the finale
this was a cool episode. Like, I struggled to not give it a 5 just because of the ending. And I'm like, I'll know by the end of this podcast if I'm going to give it a 5. That's how much I love this episode.
Well, we'll get to the ratings in a bit because I think there's, I mean, the element of disorientation and confusion, I think, is affecting a lot of people with their reaction to this episode because it was so different from any other episode of Doctor Who we've ever had. Well, aside from the fact that the actual plot was ripped off from Ark in Space, the Tom Baker episode.
Yes, that's exactly what I kept thinking.
You know, now that aside, I mean, the new Who stuff, there's been several episodes where they've ripped off something from old Who. They've rebooted it in some way or form. I don't think they did it as effectively as what they did with
the lights off.
Huh?
It was like Ark in Space with lights off.
Yeah.
But what's weird to me is how they were able to kind of have this really compelling story, riveting, and, you know, at the end you have the kind of this cliffhanger, but it's not like every single episode in this season so far has been a two-parter to be continued, except for this, possibly one of the most compelling ones. So I feel like they really could have explored the story next week, and I would have been, you know, I'm very pleased that I can, you know, see the entire thing encapsulated as they wanted to show it. But I do want more, and that more could have come next week in kind of how the 30th century is dealing with the ramifications of this, you know, video, which is pretty much like The Ring or whatever.
That's another source that they were
remixing from.
They were paying homage to that. But as Tom Baker says, homage is just another word for plagiarism. So, you know, but
everything's a remix.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. I will agree with you there. There's nothing new under the sun. And, you know, that's what we're seeing with this particular episode here. Let's take a look at some of the criticisms that people have been raising. The biggest thing I've noticed, particularly over at Reddit, mainly an American audience there at the Doctor Who subreddit there, there's a lot of issues with people seem to be having issues with the explanation behind how the Sandmen were formed, that these electrical impulses forced the cellular structures of room, as it's officially called, they refer to it as sleep dust or sleep boogers, gaining sentience and consuming the human host that they're attached to, where you have the creation of a hybrid, which wasn't even mentioned in the episode, by the way, but it was a hybrid being that had been created, the Sandman. And it does smack of being a little campy and cheesy in some regards. A lot of American viewers having problems with this. You guys, what do you think?
I feel like what I felt was that it wasn't so much it's creating this hybrid thing as much as it's eating away at you. The lack of sleep, the lack of dreaming eats away at you on the inside until you're left as dust.
It's like one big goofy metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like it wasn't so much like, oh, I'm a hybrid now. I did, again, like that whole last scene, not that I want to spoil it, like the visual of, you know, our friend reaching out to you while he's giving his soliloquy. I mean, it was like very clear that at that point he had just, he had been consumed. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I like that. I like that, metaphor, I guess.
This, you know what? This felt like an episode of that Stephen Moffat wrote under Russell T. Davies. It has all the awesome elements and okay, like
Blink style
are absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're made of sand and
they're made of crusty boogers sand.
Yeah. It's like a crusty like Sandman.
Yeah, there's actually a book, it's by a woman named Ansar Ganguly. It's called The Buggles. She's an Indian writer who's writing in America. It's published. It's a kind of tween kind of book, and it's about this place, this like world underground, and it's where your boogers and your boils and all that stuff congeals into beings. And I was reminded of that too.
Body horror is, I'm a big horror aficionado. I love horror films. And one aspect of horror films that have been popular ever since, longest time, one of the earliest and most famous examples was 1982's The Thing. That was a lot of body horror there. We're still seeing that now in the form of movies like The Human Centipede. I think this is the first time we've ever seen it, creep into Doctor Who. Which is interesting. The other thing that's absolutely brand new in this episode, first time ever in the history of Doctor Who, no title sequence.
Didn't mean I have had time.
No, it was deliberate. I mean, that they had the title with the code, and it said Doctor Who vertically on the screen and Clara Oswald vertically on the screen. And that was the first time ever. A couple of other, actually, some notes about the, let me see here. I've got my right URL here that I can, so I can read off the interesting facts for you. But there's a couple of interesting, facts about this particular episode as well. This is, Mark Gatiss's first episode in which it is set in the future.
Was like, whoa, we're in the future?
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, yeah. There was that.
Which Rose was just used to that. Rose was just like, eh.
This is also notable for being the first episode in the series to cast an openly transgender actress.
Which one was that?
And it was Bethany Black, who played 474, the Grunt.
Oh.
Yeah. Trans woman. And I felt that her role was a little wasted.
Yeah.
I wouldn't celebrate that. It's a very minor.
Yeah, it was a minor.
Well, I mean, it's all about
front center, you know? Otherwise, it just sounds like you're pandering because she happens to be.
Yeah. I agree with you completely.
But it's also, I mean, like, you know, as a guy who's seen minorities, noticed very closely when minorities rise up or appear on TV, it was an interesting first step because they were able to have this person who is a flesh and blood character, but one that is distinct. So on some level, there was some banter, and I think it was way too light. You know, they kind of they didn't get into it in a meaty way, the way like, you know, in Star Trek, they had a whole episode about Data, whether he could make his own decisions. But they did get into the idea that, like, she's different, but she's a person. She's... You know, you can't just, you know, you're not just going to throw them away or send them outside or whatever. They're valuable.
Right, but I think that's
subtext. I think it was a very weak attempt to have subtext about, you know, diversity.
I agree. I think the subtext was extremely weak. And it had to do with, I feel it was shoehorned into the episode because that's the kind of thing that you'd want to devote a little bit more time to. There's obviously a message there that Mark Gatiss was trying to include in the episode, and we know that he's a very big advocate for diversity and gay rights and transgender rights. It's very well known that he is very supportive of those movements, and I feel like it just kind of got shoehorned in as a...
Shoehorn is perfect. It's a perfect word for what's going on.
It just kind of got stuffed in there, and I really think that this is something that they maybe might want to explore in a future episode with a bit more detail, because it also kind of smacked a little bit of the Ood as well.
It
was very, very Ood-like.
She felt like power Ood.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff that could have been explored there. The other thing I want to mention, Rasmussen, the guy with the glasses recording the video and infecting the galaxy, was played by Reese Shearsmith, who is a fantastic actor, had previously played Patrick Troughton in an Adventure in Space and Time, the docudrama about the beginnings of Doctor Who. So he's part of the Doctor Who family already, so it was nice to see him involved in this particular series as well. The other thing I wanted to mention that I kind of got a feeling for was right at the end there, and I had to rewatch this, but right at the end there where they were running to the TARDIS and trying to get into the TARDIS and get away, It almost felt like the Sandmen weren't actually after the people. It felt like they wanted to gain access to the TARDIS.
Yeah, like they were like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, it kinda, yeah, I kind of got that impression. So it'll be interesting to see if that's a topic that they explore later Greg, on.
I wanted to ask you about the Dream Lord, as represented in Doctor Who, and if there would be a connection there.
Doubtful. The Dream Lord is really the subconscious psychological representation of the Doctor.
And now there's mystical sand inside the TARDIS sand juice, whatever.
Well, I don't know if they got in there. Well, see, we do know that the Doctor is not infected because he did not use the Morpheus devices, but we do know that Clara is.
Now, here's the other thing I have to stop and say. I loved the comment that Capaldi made about the sleep. He goes, even I sleep. And she's like, when do you sleep?
And then he just stared at you with this.
Yeah. Actually, that scene was.
The best part was when they showed the camera on his face, and it's almost as if they were highlighting the bags under his eyes.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention about that was actually a very key scene, because that was, for me, that was the moment that I realized, hey, wait a minute, something is not right here, because this so-called camera angle is being shown to us from Clara's perspective. She doesn't have a camera on her. So what's going on here? That was the moment for me.
That was the clue, yeah.
Yeah, that was the cue and the clue. And I knew that something was up. And I think that explanation too of the way the footage was collected and created was really stunning. I don't think we've seen that in a Doctor Who episode before.
No.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, any other criticisms or positive remarks?
Now, there was a reference to Old Who that I wanted you to ask about too. The naming, where Clara names him the Sandman.
I'm the Doctor. I get to choose the names.
What did he say?
He was remarking about the Silurians. The Silurians were actually named incorrectly because they were from a completely different period of prehistory. So yeah. they should have been named something else. I can't recall because they weren't specifically from the Silurian era. And so there was a misnamed error in the history of Doctor Who. And I like the way they kind of addressed that gaffe by the writers. By Capaldi saying, making out that somebody else had named the race of reptiles as Silurians.
That's some hard work.
Yeah. Feel like.
Yeah. Well, it was a great little reference that if you're a geek, you're like, oh yes. But if you're like kind of like a more casual watcher, you're gonna be like, okay, Silurians, all right. You know, like it's easy to pass over if you're not gonna explore it, and it's not gonna take away from the scene. So I think it was a clever ad. It's like a little gift, a little bit of dessert. Little Easter egg.
Nice to have a single standalone episode, I will add. I mean, I've been loving the two-parters so far, much to the chagrin of Tom, who has an opposing opinion to me on that.
Definitely gets in the way of podcasts.
Not really.
I think that's probably it more than anything.
But it was more refreshing to me than I imagined it would be, to be perfectly honest with you. I really enjoyed the standalone episode this time, and I think it'll be interesting to see where Moffat goes with series 10. I just enjoyed that. All right, ratings. Let me start off. I am going to give this a 4 out of 5. It would have been a 5, but the thing that really bugged me about it was that I think the whole trans subtext that was trying to be injected into the
plot. Or lack of subtext.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
The poor execution of trans subtext.
It was shoehorned in there, and I don't think it really added to the story at all. I think those particular issues and concerns would be best explored in another episode where it gets a lot more focal point. But also the reason is that, the whole thing about the sleep boogers, I can understand that and I'm fine with that, but does the creation of the creatures really need an explanation? I mean, wouldn't leaving that ambiguous make it a bit more creepy?
I think, here's the thing. There's definitely like a bit of lost in translation because like no one on this side of the pond calls that stuff sleep sand, right?
Yeah, sleep dust.
You know, sleep dust, sleep sand. Nobody calls it that. They just call it like you have like, you know, booger in your eye. You have like,
I thought it was awesome though, still.
No, I mean, it was very convenient to name them the Sandmen if you call it sleep sand. And if that's the way they do it in Britain, that's great. My mom is from the Commonwealth, and they don't even call it boogers. They just call it sleep. You have sleep
in your eye. That's what they call it in Australia. You got sleep in your eye. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's, it's, It was a strange thing that it's easy to get over. I'm not saying it's a deal breaker, but I would say that that was definitely like a hiccup in probably much of the North American experience.
The scientific name for that mucus is rheum, R-H-E-U-M. I actually went and looked it up because I was like, well, what is it called? What's the actual name for it? It's called rheum.
See, that's kind of a tight name, though.
Yeah.
You could get away with making a bumpy-headed alien called rheum.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Dwayne, what's your rate? I gave it a 4 out of 5. What are you giving it?
I'm gonna hang out at it's a 3.5 to 4. I don't quite know. I'm still, I guess, absorbing it, but I really feel like it's up there.
Make a commitment, mate. 3.5 or 4? Which is it?
I'll lean in and say it's a 4. There's just been so many good episodes as a standalone. It stood alone, right? Yeah. They didn't need to do the second episode. So I'm going to have to give it a 4 on that. Although I will say, do you guys remember the episodes with the artificial people that, you know, you made copies of people when you were in the mines because of the radiation and the lightning hit and suddenly they were alive?
Oh, are you talking about the plastic stuff?
Yes. The plastic people?
Yeah, that's God, what are they called again? Help me out here, someone.
Well, we know what we're talking about. And these plastic people, I feel like there was much more exploration of these alternative...
The nesting consciousness, otherwise known as autons.
Yeah, the autons. You know, there was significant discussion in that two-parter about what it means to be alive, what it means to be, you know, a worthy, you know, whether it's a worthy being or not. Like, you know, just what it means to have rights, right? They wanted rights. They wanted to be respected as people too, even though they were different. And unfortunately, like so many... unfortunately, just like Frankenstein's creature, they were treated poorly and they treated the world poorly. But I did think that, like, when I think of Doctor Who addressing the concerns of, you know, outside groups, marginalized groups, my mind is just coming up with more and more examples how they've done it so much better than they did in this episode, if that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah. Tom, what's your writing, mate?
So when I consider all the crazy awesome camera work, that just the sheer coolness of the story, the subtle, like, the subtle comments to Old Who, you know, I have to look the other way on kind of the hurried ending and say that, like, this episode for me did the most different cool stuff. This is like the I wish there were more episodes like this in the series, and I also think that there will be a few things that tie back to it later on. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Oh, your first 5 of the season, isn't it, Nate?
Wow.
That's very first cool. 5. Yeah. So that is a total of 13 out of 15, which for us means that the rating will be out of 10, once I've calculated it here, will be 9. 9 out of 10.
Wow.
9 out of 10. And in our previous ratings for this season... only two other episodes scored as high as 9. The first being The Magician's Apprentice, the opening episode of the season, and episode 5, which was The Girl Who Died.
Mm.
So there you go.
Right.
Yeah, very, very, very happy with this episode I was. And I with the mention of classic Doctor Who episodes, I'm going to recommend people check out Tom Baker's Ark in Space. It's an absolute classic. It's one of those classic episodes you can pick up at any time. Now, bear in mind, this episode will show you how dedicated the effects crew were on Doctor Who, because they had a much smaller budget back in those days. And yes, if they needed to create a monster and they only had enough money to do it a certain way, they would do their best to use whatever elements they could to make it come real. They cared about the story so much. So there is a few creature effects there that are bubble wrap painted green, but if you can look past that, you'll thoroughly enjoy it. I'm telling you right now, it's a great story, and it's pretty much a mirror image of this particular episode of Doctor Who, Sleep No More, the Doctor and his companions arrive on a seemingly abandoned space station, and there is a new alien threat that's consuming humans and creating hybrid creatures among them. So it's well worth checking out, very much in relation to this episode. Any recommendations from you guys for our listeners?
You know, I don't have a recommendation, but I did want to make note of a past episode that we talked about. I think it was the first part of the Zygon two-parter. That really heavy political kind of messaging in the background, where they're basically saying that, like, these small group of people are terrorists. They're not. They don't represent everyone. You can't punish everyone. And I really wonder, there was a big backlash. People say, don't, you know,
yeah, you know, preach to me.
I wonder, with Paris and everything that's happening now, if that episode would play differently.
Well, I'll tell you I saw that episode for the first time today. I saw the last three episodes today because I watched with my wife and she was out of town and I was out of town. And in seeing this idea of, you know, being put forth that these people are refugees that we allowed to come to Earth, and the expectation was assimilation. And they feel that they're hiding out and they can't be their true, you know, the sect believes that they're hiding out and they can't be their true selves, that they were once great and now they are, you know, subordinate, you know, maybe their culture's being lost, whatever. It does heavily echo, not only the migrant crisis, but effectively the history of refugees in both America and in Europe. And when I look at that, I wasn't moved in any kind of, you know, negative emotional way. But I did understand that this is an argument that, you know, much like some of the race stuff that's gone on over the last 18 months, you know, cops and dark people and things like that, it's something that we don't want to talk about, right? It's something that we're kind of like, we avoid. And when I think when Doctor Who brought that up, you know, we were watching it and we really felt as if, obviously, you know, that population could have a bone to pick with the mainstream. But what Doctor Who was getting at, I think that was the most powerful about it, was that the answer is not the destruction of, you know, anything, right? And it was one of the stronger episodes where, you know, the Doctor, who's, you know, long been against the use of, you know, weapons and so on, he was really heavy-handed about the fact that, you know, we shouldn't be shooting and they shouldn't be doing their thing. And I felt that it was it kind of reminded me of the Tenet Doctor, who's always trying to find a way out of things without any lives being lost or whatever. Whereas I feel like this Doctor, actually it's the beginning of the Tenet Doctor, because the Tenet Doctor got a little hardcore at the end there. But this Doctor has kind of been, there's kind of been more violence going on around this Doctor. And I like the fact that he was like, no, we need to not be that. We need to figure out a way that we can all get along together. We need to figure out a way that we can coexist, because coexistence is the name of the game. You know, I've destroyed worlds, right? I'm like Shiva. I've taken things down. So I like that. I felt it was anytime TV, especially science fiction, because the problem with so much science fiction today is that it's about spaceships and laser guns, and it's not necessarily about the human condition. And it's one of the few episodes where they were focused on the human condition, which again brings us back to the disappointment about this the use of the highlighting of the trans actress actor. When it didn't really explore her condition at all.
Yeah, Doctor Who is known in a lot of ways. Doctor Who to social commentary is, in science fiction, is the same thing as Romero's Dawn of the Dead series to horror, because every one of his zombie movies are always about some deeper social or political commentary. And that's what holds the plot together. That's why those particular movies are still very, very revered. And it's the same thing with Doctor Who. Doctor Who has a reputation of being able to do that stuff, you know, exceptionally well. And when they don't do it very well, it stands out to the fans. And I think this is one example where it was not done effectively. I'm not overly criticizing it. I just think it needed a lot more air to move around and breathe and explore a little. You know, it's kind of the opposite end of the scale for me as far as what Kill the Moon was last season. I mean, that was just too much. It was too in your face too much all the way through.
It's also a little boring.
Yeah. so there's that. But with the mention there of Capaldi's monologue, I'm going to use that to segue into our comments and remarks. Transmat Trev pops in last week with regards to the Zygon inversion. He says, Peter Capaldi, give the man a BAFTA. And a BAFTA, of course, is the awards that they have over in Britain for acting. And he says, and a knighthood. He needs a knighthood. Bloody sterling performance by the man, highlighting the futility of war. Absolutely amazing. And Trev, we can't help but agree with you. I also have another message here that I've been hanging on to for a while, and I haven't really had a chance to read it out on the show. I got an email from Sterling Martin who says, hi, Greg and Tom. I just wanted to send a note to say, this is back from the beginning of the season. I really appreciated the viewing suggestions this week to give background to the Magician's Apprentice. I became a fan with New Who, so having some guidance where to go in the vast library for Old Who is great, especially when it ties so directly into the new show. It was fun to see the original Davros story in Genesis of the Daleks and revisit the ending of season 4, for which was one of my favorite season endings. I got into listening to your podcast at work last year, and it adds a lot of fun to the show, to watching the show, to have you guys weigh in. Keep up the fun work. And he also mentions, P.S., I found that the Genesis of the Daleks on Daily Motion, if you're able to recommend that to your listeners. So there are versions of it out there. I would recommend seeing if it's available for streaming through legal means, because the quality is usually a lot higher.
Actually, I think they actually do have it legal now.
On Netflix? I think it's on Netflix.
Having now interviewed the Daily Motion folks for a while, I actually do think that those clips are legit.
Oh, okay. Well, good. That's fantastic.
It might be in the domain or something. I gotta say, the mention of the tenant departure at the end of season 4, that's probably like my favorite situation right there.
Yeah.
That's like, if you want me to cry in front of a screen, pop that puppy on.
Well, I do also, before we close out on this episode, I want to mention to everyone that even though we do talk spoilers on these episodes of the TARDIS Blend, the spoilers we discuss are about the specific episode we've just watched. I wanted to warn people, because Tom and I have been remaining as much spoiler-free as we possibly can before viewing the episodes this season. And I think that gives us a bit more of a fresher and honest reaction to the episodes as they come through. That being said, though, be warned, because there is a lot of spoiler activity going on the web at the moment, especially with regard to the next 3 episodes, the final 3 episodes of this particular season. So just if you're trying to remain spoiler, remain as being spoiler free.
That's me.
Yeah, you probably want to avoid a lot of this official synopses and things like that that are being put out by the BBC at this point. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, the TARDIS Blend this season, it feels a bit fresher because of the sort of, we're gonna see it and then 18 hours later we're gonna talk about it. And I think that allows you to have a certain empathy with the people who are looking at the show for the first time. For the episode for the first time, and then downloading the TARDIS Blend right after they do so. So yeah. I really think it was a good experiment. Well, an experiment that yielded good results.
I agree. I absolutely agree with you there. And I think we still haven't had a full 10 out of 10 yet from us. So we're yet to see if there's anything that's going to be a stellar episode, that the one that we can point to that we can recommend to others as a good starting point for Doctor Who, like Blink, like The Doctor's Wife. Those two have always stood out for Tom and myself.
Oh, definitely. Blink is the beginning.
Yeah. And, you know, we're still waiting for that. But so far, the average ratings that we're giving have been very good. I mean, the lowest rating we've given is the woman who lived, which got a 6. And that's not a harsh rating. That's like a good average episode of Doctor Who.
So, yeah. I think by and large, the season is just really shaped up.
Yeah. All right, folks, that's all from us. You guys got anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Dwayne, where can we catch you online?
You can always check me out on my website, dwayned.com. And you can hear me every Friday on the Geeks of Doom podcast, The Drill Down, where we talk about technology and a whole bunch of other stuff. Tom, where can we find you?
You guys can find me in my coverage of technology over at gigaohm.com. Or just go check out Greg's stuff. It's way more interesting.
Yeah, we've been having
metal, certainly.
We've been having a bit of a break from Blendover lately, but Heavy Metal Historian is still out there, which is found at heavymetal666.com. Hope you can check that out at some point. And that's it from us, folks. We'll catch you next week for Face the Raven, in which we see the return of a new and already familiar character. I won't spoil it for you. They did hint for it in the trailer, but it's coming up. So we'll see you next week. Take it easy. Bye-bye. Billy Gap.